Welcome to the Scaling Tech Podcast, where we help you manage your growing engineering team. Through expert interviews, we help you navigate the challenges of leading, hiring, growing, and nurturing your tech team to deliver the value your customers demand. Brought to you by AgilityFeet.com, experts in staffing engineering teams in Latin America for clients globally.
And so I think good leadership is about creating that environment where someone can do a really good job, and also being that coach, mentor, whatever it is, for your lowest and highest performers. The people in the middle typically just need you to get the F out of the way.
Welcome to the Scaling Tech Podcast, the podcast for leaders of growing software engineering teams. I'm Aaron Syme, here with my co-host, David Alfaro. How are you doing today, David?
I'm doing fine, thank you. How are you?
I am doing well. My cup overfloweth with interesting thoughts from this conversation we just had with Chris Dyer. We talked about remote work, which is something we've talked about before on the podcast, but in today's episode, we focused more on remote leadership, because I think it's one thing to be able to work well remotely and to be an effective team member in a remote team, but leading a remote team requires a bit of a level up. And Chris Dyer is a leadership consultant who spoke with us about the unique aspects of leading and engaging your remote team. And we talked about a lot of different things about the hiring and recruiting and meeting styles and stuff that leaders need to know. I thought it was really interesting. One of my favorite parts of this conversation, one of the takeaways I've got is we talked about being a coach and a mentor to the lowest and the highest performing members of your team and not worrying as much about the middle. And I think I probably have fallen into the trap before that he said most leaders do of trying to coach and mentor the people in the middle. People in the middle are generally okay, he was saying. It's your low performers getting them up to at least a mid-level performer, and then your high performers making sure that they stay at that level, that they're engaged. So focusing on those two ends, I thought, was a really interesting observation. I hadn't thought about something I'm going to have to think about more. What did you take away from today?
At the beginning, I was skeptical about one claim that he did, which was similar to something like this. It was like remote work is a way to, one, screen the best people in the organization. I mean, to discover who they are, and to also to make you a better member. I mean, a leader, a developer, a team member. And the reason I was skeptical is because my position so far has been is that I think that remote work is not for everybody. And only, but he made a very compelling argument that it also helps to build, to your point, right? It is, it helps you. I mean, remote work helps you to better people. And he made a very good argument to that. And I appreciate that point of view of his. So yeah, this is good. This is a good episode. Absolutely.
Yeah, I enjoyed that part as well. All right, well, let's get to our interview with Chris Dyer. Chris Dyer is an international keynote speaker, consultant, and a best-selling author for today's work world who inspires his audiences with straightforward delivery, insightful candor, and engaging humor. He is author of The Power of Company Culture and his most recent book, the Amazon bestseller Remote Work, with co-author Kim Shepherd. Chris provides public speaking, online courses, and coaching on leadership. He'll be speaking with us today about remote leadership. Welcome to the Scaling Tech Podcast, Chris.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you join us today. Thanks for taking the time. Why don't we start a little bit more with a little more about yourself? How did you get involved in leadership consulting around company culture and then specifically remote work?
Well, the short version of a long story is I owned a company that did background checks and drug testing. I sold at the end of 2021. And when you go to a conference to talk about background checks, you do one of two things. You either scare the living bejesus out of people
or you put them to sleep. So you're either the
scared. For the record, I'm scared right now, just as soon as you said that.
right. So I learned that maybe we should talk about something else that the audience would be interested in. And we went back and thought about this, and it turns out I started a podcast. I was on someone else's podcast, and the producer of that show said, "Hey, this is interesting stuff. You guys are doing some cool stuff with your company. You should talk about this on your own show." And I went, "That's stupid. I'm not doing that. I'm not a podcaster." And I went back and told my team, and they were like, "No, you need to do this." And it was one of those moments where I go, "What are you seeing that I'm not seeing?" Right? Why did the producer want me to do it? Why did my team want me to do it? And I was just like, it's not it for me. And they were like, "Listen, we do all this cool stuff here. No one knows about it. You read all these books, you go to these conferences, you come back, you tell us, but like, we're glad you do, but what's the point if nobody else hears it?" Right? It's just kind of like for our team and our company. And they're like, "Why not share it with everybody else?" And I went, "That's a really good idea." So started doing the podcast. Then people started asking me to come and speak. Then people started asking me to write books, which if you ask any of my teachers in school, they would have laughed you out of the building if they said Chris was going to be an author one day, because writing a lot was never something I wanted to do in school. So it just sort of kept happening by accident, right? And just one thing has led to another, to another, to another, where today I'm speaking and consulting and having a good time.
Oh, that's awesome. The unexpected journeys are the most fun sometimes, like that.
Yeah.
And maybe even more so if you're kind of pulled down that journey, even against your will.
Yeah.
Perhaps. What types of companies are you working with now?
Yeah, it's a lot of different types of companies. I would say that they tend to be, so if I'm consulting, it tends to be, you know, the 5 to 50 employee, 5 to 50 million. These are people who really want to go up to the next level. And that's what I have a lot of experience doing. With the big boys, I tend to be coming in more as a speaker, coming in to inspire them, do trainings, try to help them with their people. Like I work with Johnson & Johnson. I'm helping them with a one particular group of people, with a one particular thing, and then I'm out, right? Which is different than a company who says, "Geez, we're at 5. We want to get to 20 million. How do we do that?" Right. And I work with them for a much longer period of time. So, you know, it's always really nice if you have a very specific niche and you know exactly where you want to be. I sort of find myself in the bar of like incredibly good looking people to go talk to. And I don't really know which direction I want to go yet. They all seem interesting to me. And I just sort of talk to whoever wants to talk to me.
Nice. Now, when you mentioned a couple numbers around company size that you're working with there, and that made me think about what, from both a culture as well as a remote work perspective, do you see certain like headcount sizes of a company that have major inflection points? And part of what makes me ask that is I think for David and I, when we started our company, for a long time, we hovered right around 25 people and really struggled to get above that number. In terms of how we did our sales and our operations and everything. And then from there, you know, once we figured out how to get to 30, it was really easy to get to 50, right? And so on, you know, we're over 100 people in the organization now. And so, you know, there were definitely distinct things there in our culture and our leadership, I would say. What do you see with your clients?
So I think getting to 25, like you said, is difficult in the sense that you tend to have people getting off the bus around that time who were good for you when you were at 10 or 15 people. And now they've realized or you've realized this is not the home for them anymore. And so you find yourself at 22, 23, 25, back down to 23, 22, back up. And that's because you've got people coming in and other people going. And that's a good thing. At 25, though, you really need to have a fantastic senior team. And when I say fantastic, I just don't mean experience. I mean one that is reflective of the community of people that you are hiring and that you want to employ in the future, right? So I looked at my senior team and went, "Wow, we have a lot of white males sitting here. In fact, that's all we had. very unintentional, but like that's just what we had. I'm like, I have no representation. I have no strong female. I kept trying to hire them and it wasn't working. And so I finally said, I'm going to have to really double down my efforts here and make sure that the group of people that are leading this organization represent what I want going forward. Right. And so when the moment I did made that, that shift and made that change, it took me about 18 months to really get it where I wanted it to be. We were at 50, mm-hmm. like growth and contracts. And all of a sudden things radically changed and it's hard to like pinpoint. Well, I made this one change. Did that make that happen? I mean, it was thousands of decisions, but you know, suddenly people wanted to work for us who we couldn't even get to talk to us before because our leadership team looked like a place where they wanted to work, where they could see themselves, where they could see representation for themselves, or they could believe that the things we were saying we really meant because you could look at and we were doing what we said we were going to do. So I think 50, 25, then you get into 50. I think 50 to 100 for every company is really unique. And it's just sort of messy and fun. And like you're sort of dealing more with I think it's cash flow. Like 50 to 100 is all about cash flow. And so you're adding great people and things are going great, but it's like, is this sustainable and can we do this? The other big one, and lots of authors and a lot of social economists and anthropologists, and everyone seems to be really set around 150. At 150 is the next really, really big moment that I think is as big as the 25. And that's where you can no longer remember everybody's names. As the CEO or the senior person, you get over 150 and you don't know everyone's name. You can't possibly know their spouse's names. You know, you can't, right. You're suddenly like distant from the people that you're hiring and that are on your team. And it's not easy for people to know where am I supposed to go to get this or do this because it's gotten too big. There is some really, and I apologize for, I think I've talked for 3 hours straight here. There's a lot of companies that like when their company gets to 150, when their facility gets to 150, that's the trigger point to go start another operation, another facility, another division, mm-hmm. whatever it is, because you just can't manage it anymore. Right. It's impossible. Right. And so they break that factory up into another spot, another division. They put in a layer of senior management so that they can help that 150. I think in part, that's why you saw Google do the radical cutting of what they did. It wasn't just ChatGPT and economy and AI. I think that they just, the lines were not manageable. They needed to reconstruct those lines so they could communicate mm-hmm. and help their people.
So let's talk about remote leadership. Your book, Remote Work with Kim Shepherd, has a lot of great content in it. A couple of chapters that were particularly interesting to me were around remote leadership. And you describe in that book that remote work is best for leadership and best for the company overall. And I'd love to hear you talk a little bit more about why is that the case? Why is remote work better for leadership?
Yeah, so I certainly made the argument in the book why it's best for the company, why it's best for the leader, and why it's best for the employee when it's appropriate, right? Obviously, if you're making widgets in a factory, there are people who can never be remote. So I'm not saying that every job should be remote. That's silly, right?
Sure.
But in the context where it makes a lot of sense, which I think it does for most people, when you're a leader, I think people forget that leaders were typically doing hybrid or remote work quite a bit before the pandemic. You were getting on a plane, you were going to different places, you were seeing different people, you were going to see clients, you were going to conferences. You did not spend your life as the leader of an organization sitting at a desk. In fact, you were there very little, right? If your company is big or you have a lot of places you have to be. And so you were already functioning, probably dysfunctionally functioning in a remote work or hybrid work setting, but you were tied to your desk. It was all about that desk and you were trying to get back to that desk so you could get caught up or do whatever you needed to do. And now it's about your job. And if other people are also working in hybrid, remote, or async, you can get so much more done. and more effectively. And you can change the way in which you operate in a way that allows you to, I think, to remove a lot of the barriers and a lot of the complexities and a lot of the things that we hated as leaders when we would go to a show and then had to go see a client and then come back and like everyone and their mother was trying to get into your office the one day you were there. And now it's like, we can just talk. We can just, we can communicate on Slack. I can answer a quick question while I'm at a conference. I can meet with you while I'm on a break, and we don't have to stop the work just because I'm not here. I'm not at my desk, right? So I think for leaders, it's freedom, but it's also, they're not the only ones anymore. And everybody else is operating in, or at least understands how to operate in that context. And it really, I think, lower stress, increases your productivity. And I make the other argument too, and this is why it's good for employees as well, is I think there's much better measurement and much better ways in which we can know if our employees are doing a great job and if we're doing a great job, if we're basing this on real data, not on, well, I see John and Susie sitting at their desk. They look busy. Mm-hmm. They must be productive, right? Or Steve always comes to meetings. He's a go-getter. But like, if you really, when you remove all that junk and you're like, what do they really get done? The top performers rise to the top in a much clearer and I think a much more accurate way, which is what leaders really need to know. Who's really getting the work done? Who's really excelling for me? Not who's just looking busy, showing up or kissing my butt.
Yeah.
I think that is a very good observation, Chris. I what we've seen is the very talented and very valuable people, they have a good chance to shine in this model. Mm-hmm. I agree thoroughly with that. Now, when you visit companies and you go and help them, in your experience so far, what are the most common obstacles or the most common obstacles or frictions that you detect that you help them to overcome?
Are we talking about remote leadership?
Yep.
So in remote leadership for the big companies, it's that there's a complete disagreement among senior leadership about whether or not we're going to do remote or hybrid work and what's the value, right? So you have, like, I recently worked with a client and the customer service team is 100% remote. They have the top scores on engagement. They are the most productive. They have the, I mean, they are killing it, right? And every metric. And yet you have this guy in a different department saying remote and hybrid work doesn't work. And he's crossing his arms and he's grumpy and he says this doesn't work. And you're like, what are you talking about? Your literal customer service department is this shining example of incredibleness. And so what we had to do is back up and say, listen, what you're saying is it doesn't work for you. And so let's talk about why that is. And let's break that down and figure that out, right? And his story was very similar to a lot of other leaders, which is they don't know the new playbook. They haven't been taught the new way to manage. You could argue that they're idiots for not figuring that out on their own and not going out and asking questions and reading books. But the reality is they only know what they know from before, which was one part what they learned from their parents, one part what they learned from their teachers, and one part what they learned from probably some other crappy bosses when they were young executives, which was, if I can see you, I can manage you. If you're here, we collaborate. Culture's about what happens at the coffee pot, right? All this old crap, right? And so they don't know the new way. And so with that guy, I had to teach him how to, here's some two or three things you can do right now when you're hybrid and remote. And let me know, he's already written me and said, I cannot believe how well this one thing is helping me understand if my people are okay, right? He swore it would never work, but promised me he'd try it. And he's already seen some success. So it's like figuring out who's the old school, you know, thinkers in the organization and helping them do that, right? So that's in big companies. In small companies, it's that the senior leaders, the owners, the CEO, whoever, they don't want to give up control. They say they want to grow. They say they want to do all these things and they're at 25 employees or whatever it is. And it's like, okay, you say you want these people to go do X, Y, and Z, but you've not given them the authority. You've not given them the budget. You've not given them the pass that control to them. It's fine if you want to know what's going on, but they're still like all roads lead to their brain still. Right. And that was a huge lesson I had to learn when we went remote. I mean, it was hard. I unintentionally designed the company that everything came through me, right? Because I was the only one that knew the business when we very first started. It made sense that everything went through me. But at 25 people, we had to rewrite all roads of communication. Like I only had my senior team tell me what's going on and what's happening. And anybody else had to stop coming to me because they were getting my permission. And if they didn't get my permission, we didn't do anything. Mm-hmm. Everything stopped. Right. So I think there's two different kind of big friction points based on size.
Right. Right. And the earlier, the first point that you made about big companies is very interesting. I mean, the fact that you can easily see something doesn't mean that anyone else can see it as well as you. Yeah. And we had this experience, Erin, when we had this client and a client that we like very much and we like to work with them. And when we were bringing, remote software developers from Brazil to this company in the United States. It was for one moment I paused to digest the surprise that they had already a remote work environment with their employees. And for some reason, they couldn't make the integration that is basically the same with the us. Brazilian guys. I was very surprised, but it is just take a moment and go with them and review the process, review the onboarding process. It is just take a moment and discuss things. And we discovered that it is just maybe a perspective that they were lacking, that we helped them to see very quickly, and that's it. And that made a huge difference for them. So I like that comment. The other thing is, you mentioned something. I mean, you are talking about two things consistently, and I am very interested in going deeper with them. Normally, where we're talking consistently about leadership, and some episodes ago. We had a very interesting episode that talked about culture, and I was very insistent. I was insisting a lot about dear guest, what is your definition of culture? Because we're talking a lot about culture. Now, so can I do the same with you? I mean, what is leadership in all these contexts that we are having? What is good leadership, and what are and how it changes necessarily with remote work?
Well, I think you asked three things there. So one, what's the definition of culture? The culture is how we get things done. It's the norms. It is the unwritten rules. It is the thing. It is that pulse of like, how do I get things done? Can I just go and do it? Or do I need 9 levels of approval? You know, that's culture, right? It's like, how does it operate? I mean, I would say if you go to your friend's house when you were a kid, you could like immediately pick up on, how they are with their parents is different than I am with my parents, right? There's a different code here. There's a different, sometimes it was high trust, sometimes it was low trust, right? Like you could pick up on that and you would learn that. And if you were suddenly adopted into that new family, you'd have to learn a new way of operating. And it's the same thing in a company, right? There's a sort of operational code that's happening, and there's a culture, and then there's a subculture inside your team. And so, how you feel about your boss is typically how you feel about your CEO. How you feel about your team is typically how you feel about the company. And that is Patrick Lencioni's work. And so there's a lot of data around this. And we see the same thing, the scores almost match identically, right? There's always outliers, but typically for the norms, I like my boss, I like the CEO, I like my team, I like the company. And so if you're seeing bad scores for the company, it's like, go back and work on your teams, go go back and make your teams happier, make them work better, help that manager have a better place, because that's most of their experiences is with their team, right? So that's culture. How to be a good leader in a remote environment is remember that what you focus on grows. I'll say that again. What you focus on grows. So if you focus on trust, meaning I trust you to get your job done, not focus on where are you? Is your light green? How many hours have you worked? What do you, if I'm worried that you're not working, right? If you're focusing on that, guess what? That's going, problem actually is going to get worse because people are going to feel like you're micromanaging them. You're all over them. And they're going to, I don't know if you've ever seen those funny videos where like someone ties puts their mouse to a little vacuum, right? And it's moving around all the time. So it looks like they're always green on their thing. And so people find ways to like be passive aggressive teenagers if you're going to micromanage them. So you focus on trust, you focus on outcomes, you focus on what is success, what does a good job look like, and then let them go do it, right? Trust them to do it, trust but verify. And so I think good leadership is about creating that environment where someone can do a really good job and also being that coach, mentor, whatever it is for your lowest and highest performers.
Right.
The people in the middle typically just need you to get the F out of the way, right? They don't, and they're not really that interested in getting promoted. They're not really that interested in like this other stuff. They're like, listen, I got my job. I'm happy. Leave me alone. Pretty much, right? Your high performers, like, how do I get promoted? How do I go up to the next level? Cool. You got to work with them. And then your low performers, you got to work with them, right? And I mean that like, can you get them to be medium up in the middle or do they need to go? Are they not here? They're not going to work out, right?
Right.
And I honestly think that most leaders spend most of their time on the people in the middle and ignore the top performers because they're annoying and they're asking too many questions and they're like, you know, a bull in a china shop. They're just like, you know, and then the low performers they ignore because they're like, well, I don't know if they're, you know, hopefully they'll figure it out or whatever. They just don't want to deal with it because it's hard. So I think the best leaders I know are really working with those groups, that really setting good outcomes. And I think last but not least, anytime I've been in a room and with a set of leaders, the ones that don't talk very much, it is shocking to me how often they are the ones with the best scores, they're the best leaders in the organizations, right? They're good listeners. And they really are able to understand what's really being said and not said. And then when they do talk, it's really impactful, right? As opposed to being someone who just won't shut up in a meeting, right? Those people, it's almost like, oh, you're the idiot. You're the bad leader. Thanks for pointing it out to me by not shutting up for the last 35 minutes, right? So...
yeah, I like that. I mean, exactly. It's like they are showing their anxiety and insecurities in that way. That's interesting. And I really agree that part where, I mean, the way that we finally found a way to grow, Erin and I, was when we sit down one day and we said, look, we cannot be with a whip behind every single developer. I mean, mm-hmm. If we want to grow, you have to make the decision of being sure that you make your best effort to hire the most self-disciplined and ambitious people that you can find. Because if you can do that, then you can trust them to do the work. And that's, and I think when we were having that conversation, we had that little piece of, or that little much of anxiety. Because of that it feels like renouncing to power, right? It feels a dash
of up our throne.
Yeah.
The one thing to remember, David, is that that was what was right for you.
Right.
And so this is the one thing I think people get wrong is that they think they read a book or they talk to someone that there's one way they're supposed to do this. So I have been seen so many cultures. There's ones where My Kim Shepard, I wrote the book with, I mean, she had a recruiting company. And if you were a top recruiter and you got top scores and you got your stuff done, you were on the top of the board and you got the work first. It was cutthroat, right? Like that's how they submitted work. You top performers, top scorers, top, you get the best work first. Everyone else, you're fighting for crumbs. You're trying to work your way up and to be a, for me, that is not the environment that I wanted at all. We were all about psychological safety. We were all about high communication. We were all about, you know, helping each other be successful, working, coaching, talking. Like it wasn't about high stress, high performance. We expected high performance. We came up with those goals together, but this was, it was a totally different feel, right? But so I think it's important that the owners or the CEO, the senior leaders, this is a really important conversation about who are the people that we want, what's right for our organization, right? And then go find those people that fit in. Because what Bezos does, what Zuckerberg does, what Google, all these, they're all totally different, right? They're big companies, they're successful. I mean, Apple, there's not one way. There's not one, like, you know, code or something you're supposed to follow. We all can't hire the same types of people, right? It would be silly. There's not like one type of employee that's perfect. So you have to really get, I think, deep down in your heart and figure out what you care about as a business owner and what does that, those people look like that you want to be around every day, and then make that the truth and move forward.
Yeah, I love it. Yeah, I think that's a great observation. And I think it part of, I think for us and probably for others, part of figuring out who we wanted to be around, it took a little bit of time of working with people of a variety of different, you know, skill levels or experience levels, and to kind of figure out who are the people that are really working best for the type of company we want to be, for the type of clients that we're serving, that sort of thing. And then I think we started to get a more somewhat deliberate and conscious and somewhat intuitive sense of who we could hire that would be a good fit into the team. And especially at that time, we were doing this a decade ago, going through this. So remote work was not as popular at that time as it is now, but we were a remote first company. So we were very interested in trying to see who is going to work well in this environment, because most of the people we were recruiting at the time did not have experience working remotely. Now, a lot more people do have experience working remotely, obviously. So that changes the game a little bit. How do you recommend trying to figure out if a candidate for a remote position has the right mindset or ability or diligence to work well remotely? How does that affect your recruiting?
Sure. I mean, we did a few things. I mean, to your point, it's changed a little bit because more people have this remote experience. So we never set out to say they had to have remote experience in the past, because that was a really hard thing to find, which obviously now most people have had some experience. So we did a couple things that we thought would be for us that were very helpful, that would tell us, are they that kind of person that we want? So the first one was, we would require, I would send them a list of instructions on what to do to get a personality test done. And it was a really simple one, to get them to schedule time on my calendar, and, you know, and tell them they needed to have a webcam and they were going to be on Zoom with me or whatever we were using. And so it was like, step one, can they follow a set of instructions? And it was shocking how many of them couldn't follow. They couldn't follow a set of instructions for most jobs in the company I owned, you were out. Like, you have to be able to independently be able to read instructions and figure it out, right? Yeah. I don't care if you got to go ask 9 people that has nothing to do with me to figure it out. But like, as long as I think that you figured it out by the time you got to me, then I was okay. That was filter number one. Filter two is, I would send them their personality test and I would send them the results of my personality test as well as anyone else they were interviewing with. So I thought it was fair game to say, if I'm going to ask you to tell me about you, I'm going to share with you about me and anybody else. It was big bonus points if they had clearly read their test and read my test and had any questions or had made some connection or even a concern. You know, like, I noticed, Chris, you're like really hands off. I don't know. Like, I kind of need a boss who's like telling me what to do next and all that. I mean, whatever, right?
Right.
So that was a big one. And then the last one was I came up with this little, it's the silliest thing. And I'll tell you that it has worked so well. We would ask people, tell me the difference between Louis Armstrong, Lance Armstrong, and Neil Armstrong. Okay, and that was like the last little bucket of that instructions. I did not care how they got the answer or what they did, but how they answered told me so much about their personality. So if it's a salesperson, what am I looking for that person to do? Am I looking for them to be concise and yet funny and engaging? If this is an accounting person, I mean, if they write back, you know, trumpet player, bicyclist, first man on the moon, like short and there we go, right? So it wasn't one answer fits all, right? I might be hiring someone in a research position. They literally, people would copy and paste the entire Wikipedia thing. Fine. I didn't ask for an original essay. I just asked them to give me the information and they gave me the information. And if it was accurate and correct, I could learn so much, right, from people. If they got it wrong, like, how do you get that wrong? How do you not know how to use the Google, right, to figure that out? And then people would get it wrong. So it was just a simple little test just to get people, just to get some sense of their personality, some sense of who they were. And it was a really good place to start the conversation where, how did you like that? How did you do that? What made you do this or not do that? And like you suddenly like in their brain a little bit, and it really helped us figure out who they were. Some people would admit, I had no idea who those people were. I'd ask my mom, you know, and it was like, okay, well, at least you got us the answer. Maybe you're a little immature. We had to figure that out. So it was so much to figure out. It was kind of cool.
Yeah, that's a really interesting question to ask. I like that.
Hey, Chris. Go ahead. Yeah. What is the personality test that you used?
We use DISC. So,
okay, good.
Yeah, for a long time, Tony Robbins was giving away a DISC program on his website, and so I think it was a way to like get people into his, you know, email system or whatever. But there was like it was almost as good as the full version of DISC. So we would just send people there. They would send back the free one. And then it went to them and then they had to send it to us as part of those instructions. And then we would send back ours. But I think DISC is great. I would also have them do strengths finders. So we're really big about focusing on our strengths. However, and this might be another interesting story. When we were looking at the company and we wanted to become more diverse, and this is really about being diverse in thought, diverse in how we approach things. I had us, everyone in the company do our strengths finders. We were about 25, 30 people at the time. And we took everyone's top five strengths and we mapped them out. So we had every strength, I don't know, it was like 47 or something. We had a list of people's names and we put a little, you know, mark for every person and every strength. And it, when you look at it on an Excel sheet or a Google sheet, it was very obvious that we had a lot of people with some very similar personality traits, responsibility, accuracy, professionalism, right? But it was also very obvious we had nobody in analytical and like these other types of strengths. And I just made this very random and probably very obtuse decision. And I said, you cannot send me someone for a final interview unless they have in their top five one of the strengths that we are missing. So I won't even consider them for the job if they don't have a strength where we have nobody, right? And to my absolute shock and surprise, because I just thought, well, let's just try to get some different people in here. That's just, it was very almost careless in my making this random, you know, statement. The people who I started seeing in front of me in the Zoom looked different, talked different, came from different backgrounds, different schools. And it was like this magical way to like help us with our DE&I goals without telling people we have to hire more of insert whatever here, right? I wasn't telling people I want more women or I want more of this or more. I just said, listen, I know we got a lot of good people in this. Hire more of whatever these skill sets are. And it totally changed the company, right? We've still got the kinds of people we want to work with, but we started getting different voices and different attitudes and different skill sets. And that helped us. Again, I think that was another part of that really important moment when we got really big and started growing really rapidly.
I really like that. That's the most tangible, tactical advice I've heard for how to use a personality assessment and strengths. I like that a lot. Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so we've talked mainly, or at least I phrased the question as around recruiting for people to join your team. If you're recruiting specifically someone to be a team lead in a remote work environment, does that change how do you find someone who's going to work well as a leader specifically in a remote situation? Is there anything different from a standard leader?
I think a remote leader has to be someone who's, what's the right word? I can't have someone who wants to take credit for everything, who wants to be in the spotlight the whole time, right? I need someone, you might call them a servant leader, or you might call them, I actually think a lot of my best leaders have been introverts, not extroverts, even though I'm, a card carrying extrovert. I've had some good extroverted leaders, but it's really interesting at, say, the last third of my time running a company, a lot of my leaders were introverts, right? They were not the big talkers. They were not the, I wanted people who were going to really go work with the staff, were going to listen. And so there's a certain personality there, right, about that they would be happy if someone could get a promotion out of their team. They might be happy that someone found a great job somewhere else, that maybe we just weren't the right company for them anymore, right? I didn't need people that were going to sabotage or take everything personally. It's not all about them, right? This is about looking at our people and saying, how can I help you as the person? I wanted those kind of authentic people that really cared about the people they were leading, that would, they thought someone was struggling because they were going through something, that they would pick up the phone and call me and say, hey, I think this person is really struggling. What can we do to help them, right? How do we do, not ignore the problem and not, that kind of stuff. So I really think that personality, and that kind of comes through in how they approach their life and things that they do. I don't think there's not one easy way to find that person. There's lots of the little data points, right? Do they volunteer? And you can get them to talk about how they handle conflict and how they manage their teams and things like that. But for me, I wanted someone who was a coach, who was a mentor, right? Versus they look to me to be the point the sword and hold the shield and tell them where we were going and what the business was going to do. But I needed my lieutenants to be the softer, mentory type people.
I like that. Yeah, I think I've heard that in a couple of ways in your comments today about, we have often talked in other episodes too of this podcast about like servant leadership and the importance of that. It's a fundamental tenet of like agile leadership styles, certainly. But I think what I'm hearing from you is the extra importance of that servant leadership in a remote environment too, because you need to be more thoughtful about coaching and mentoring and support of your team and checking in on them, that sort of thing, and not just being the loudest voice in the room or the loudest voice in that online meeting right. as a leader. I like that a lot. Thank you.
The other way I think I've put it, and maybe this might be helpful, is I need people who are really, really rigid about the big stuff and easygoing about the little stuff. And I find that bad leaders are the opposite of that.
That's great. Yeah, I like that. One of the other parts of the book that I enjoyed was the way you describe the types of meetings that a company should call and use some great terminology in that. Could you tell us a little bit about the difference between like a cockroach meeting and a tiger meeting and things like that? It was sure. great metaphors.
So we found very quickly when we went remote that we could not meet the way we used to meet, right? And the bumping into each other and all this, it turned into let's keep having all these 1 hour meetings, which I think a lot of people went through in COVID. They had the same realization we did, which is you were suddenly just on all the time and you didn't have time to work. And a lot of these meetings didn't need to be that long, but once you got on, then they would start bringing up 9 other things you weren't prepared to talk about, right? And it was just overwhelming. So we had to redesign our meetings. So the first thing is there had to be meetings where it would empower people to get, to allow them to get questions answered, to get unstuck, right? How do they get unstuck and without having to wait for their boss to be available or wait for their one-on-one in some, you know, week to week, or not wait for a team meeting that only happens once a month or once a week or whatever it is, right? How do they get unstuck so they can get their job done? And so we created the cockroach meeting. This in part came from Kim Shepard as well, but we kind of redesigned it and we've kind of a little bit. So it's a 15-minute meeting or less. Our average cockroach meeting was 7 minutes. So it is never meant to go the full time, but you get 15 minutes if that's what you need. It is optional to attend. The only person who has to attend is the one who calls the meeting. So what you would do, if you got stuck, you might go into Slack, you might go to email and say, hey, at 1 o'clock, I could really use some help with how do I insert problem here? Who can help me? And you can invite anybody you want. You want to invite the CEO, you want to invite the CTO, you want to invite whoever you think in the whole company is, right? So we're removing all of this like restrictions. You can't talk to that person without going through their boss or whatever. We're getting rid of all the politics and all of that stuff, right? And we're just saying, I have a problem. Who can help me? And it's optional. If you're too busy, if you don't got time for that, you're not in the office right now, you don't go. You don't even have to reply. But that person can say, hey, I need help. And I'll be on the Zoom at 1 o'clock. And people are happy to do a 5-minute favor for somebody. They're happy to show up and say, I had that problem. I know exactly how to fix it. Let me screen share. And so what we notice is that people who could help would show up and help. People who wanted to learn could show up and learn. Right? And that people felt empowered to get their job done because they had a mechanism to go and get it done without having to wait on their boss, get permission, all this sort of junk that's in a lot of companies, right? So that's the cockroach meeting. It's like totally free flow, whatever. Always starts on time, right? Our meetings had to start within a minute of them being called. So if your meeting was at 9, at 9:01 we were going, and if you showed up late, you had to sing a song. That was our way to deal with people being late. And we only had someone be late about once a year. The whole company would find out that someone had to sing. And, you know, it was a good reminder. You get on that call, right? And we never went over the time. There's something called Parkinson's Law that says if you set an amount of time to do something, it tends to take you that amount of time to do it. So if you schedule an hour meeting, guess what? You're going to be on for an hour. But you schedule a 15-minute meeting with the goal to end early, we were getting done in 7 or 8 minutes. How do I do this thing? Oh, here, do this, do that. None of us know. You need to cold call Mike in IT. He will be able to help you. Okay, thanks, everyone. Bye. Right? Off the call. We're not saying how we are. We're not talking about our day. We're not bringing up other topics. It's like what I would have done if I was walking down the hall and I bumped into you, right, Aaron, or I bumped into David and said, hey, do you know how to do that thing? Oh, yeah, I've talked to them. Okay, that's what we're recreating here, right? But just because I bumped you in the hall doesn't mean I'm going to ask you about the weather and your day and your kids like we've been doing on these hour-long Zooms when COVID happened. Conversely, tiger team meetings are the total opposite. So imagine you have a cockroach in your bathroom. It's a very small problem. It's a little something you want to deal with. If you have a tiger in your bathroom, it's a pretty big problem, right? So if somebody calls a Tiger team meeting, it tends to be a manager. It's going to be mandatory. It's going to be a big, long meeting, an hour, 2 hours, all day, in person. I mean, it's a big deal, right? We got a Tiger in our bathroom, right? And so what do you need to get a Tiger out? You need poison or a dart gun, right, to put him to sleep. You need a lot of really strong people to carry him out. You might need animal control. There's a lot of things that would go into that type of a scenario. Same thing in work. We're going to have PowerPoints. People are going to know what they're supposed to present. People are going to know what they're supposed to do. You're going to have provided that in advance. We're going to have a really big agenda. I mean, everyone's going to know their roles and what they're supposed to be doing. And this is a big deal, right? I'm not inviting you to a meeting and then, surprise, I needed all this data from you. I need you to tell me all these things and now you're not prepared because I didn't tell you. And then there's anger and there's frustration. There's 10 people on the line pissed off because we really weren't ready to have this meeting yet. So we have a meeting about a meeting. So this idea of like big prep, big deal, you know you're coming in and we're going to wrestle with a Tiger today, is a way just to set the expectations for everybody. And I find that they're very happy to do that. They know this is a big deal. They'll show up ready for that fight. They're ready to tackle that problem. As opposed to, hey, can you just show up real quick? Help me, right? Total difference. And we've got other meetings. We've got tsunami meetings and ostrich meetings. And there's lots of other variations of this for different types of needs. But those were definitely the two most popular.
Oh, thank you. I like that a lot. And yeah, there's some great descriptions of the other meetings as well in the book. So certainly encourage our listeners to check that out. David, do you have any other questions or thoughts for Chris today before we wrap up?
I think that we squeezed a lot of very good information from Chris so far. Yeah, so I'm very happy with that.
We did, absolutely. Chris, this has been a wonderful conversation. Really appreciate your time and sharing your expertise with us on remote leadership and remote work. How can our listeners get in touch with you for more information about your work or speaking opportunities?
Yeah, there's like a million bits of things on my website, chrisdyer.com. You can get my speaking topics there. You can contact me there. If you want to connect on LinkedIn, it's pretty easy to find me there, and my books are on Amazon or wherever you buy books online, wherever you are in the world. Amazon's not everywhere, but there's Bolt and there's other places. I'm probably there. So just put in my name. I'm not the Peruvian artist Canadian artist who lives in Peru. There's another guy who makes this like psychedelic stuff. That's not me. He's much cooler. I'm just the one who writes stuff. So but those are the best two ways to find me.
All right. Sounds great. All right. Thanks so much for your time, Chris. We'll work on getting the Peruvian psychedelic artist in on a future episode so that there's no confusion.
I said hello.
Between
the
two of you. I will. Thanks a lot for your time, Chris. Really enjoyed it.
Thank you both.
Thanks for joining us on the Scaling Tech Podcast, where we help you manage your growing engineering team. Brought to you by agilityfeet.com. Experts in staffing engineering teams in Latin America for clients globally. For more information on today's episode and to submit your ideas for future guests, please visit scalingtechpod.com.